passion fruit, the banana passion fruit.
Here's one here.
There's yeah, there's one there, green one. They ripen autumn through to spring, which is they're high vitamin C, coming on the market a bit, but not developed very much by people. They trellis very well on acacias and on these thorns. This is a South African box thorn we're telling you about, Lycium ferrocissimum. These are the infamous Caprosma repens. It's dioecious. There are two sexes. You need a male to every 15 females. You'll see the berries starting to form on the females there now. They form in, they ripen in three lots. And there's abundant seed all the year. I think they outproduce wheat for poultry. And so do these boxthorns. Now there's only one or two, those little orange fruit ripe on the boxthorn. But any time of year on a boxthorn, there are flowers, green and ripe fruits. Therefore there's a constant rain of chicken forage, and particularly good for small chickens, for the little chickens that are hatching. And they like them. This other tangled mass on the boxthorn is hops, humulus, lupulus. If you want to take a hop root back, you'll have to dig it around the corner there. I'll show you where. And they've been on there about 100 years, to my knowledge, and they're the same hops. They're easily set out, and they completely die off in winter.
You can only propagate it by root division sort of thing.
Root division to get that sort of hop.
Yeah.
There are very few hops which put down seeds. Mm-hmm. So a young bit of asparagus. If I'm telling you about the three-stem system, you just let three come up and take the rest, three of these. These have just started into growth. This is Conover's Colossal, a Canadian.
What's the vines
on there? Any other questions?
Yeah. That pentagonal leaf vine?
There's soft ivy on there, which is a bee forage, not much good for anything else. There are two or three coastal creepers through here, including, you'll see some tetragonia as we start into the tracks. This is a New Zealand grass tree. It's not a palm. It's used for weaving, and it's quite a good honey forage, and it's quite a good chicken forage. But the bees in particular like it. These little white berries are carried by birds all over the swamp, and to our surprise, it's self-seeding out into the swamp. In swamp. It's standing in water. And you can notice that it has a tendency to be peg-rooted. You'll notice a few roots coming out from up in the air. Most swamp plants are like that. So it may be a swamp thing. It'll stand any amount of easterly gales. This is the only plant that really saves us from easterlies, is this Caprosma. It's a true frontline sea plant. Fireproof, has demacia in the leaves. If you look at the underside of the leaves, you'll see little pits, and they are nitrogen manufactories, recently discovered by botanists, haven't looked at them for 1,000 years and not seen them. Feeds chickens, stops fire, reflects light, and is first-class forage for cattle, sheep, goats.
Anything you don't know, I'll tell you what it is.
You're cutting stuff here. This track we're about to go down wasn't here 18 months ago or 2 years ago. 2 years ago.
Bill, cut it.
We cut it out.
What's the sand pit for, you want to know?
Where's the sand pit? We make typhons. There's one at the back door at the house. This might get a little thing, show them something. The wind piles it up at one end, and you can take fairly large quantities of it. It's a nitrogen fixing fern, aquatic fern, one of two useful aquatic ferns. In the, for it to fix nitrogen, it has to prevent the entry of oxygen into the plant. How it does that's rather interesting in detail. It has small pockets in the ends of the fronds, and these are filled with gel, which is oxygen excluding. And it in the gel, it grows a little algae called anabina. Anabina fixes the nitrogen, not the fern, it's commensal. And we found that a pretty good mulch. These two big ones were mulched with it. These were planted a year later. We found it a very good mulch. And of course it's a handy sort of a mulch.
It keeps nitrogen fixing as a mulch?
No, it lives on for a while, then it dies and gives up its nitrogen. And also it's one of the, this was an older mulch here, still alive. It's pretty good mulch actually. Feel that, by the way, that mulch, somebody. Tell us what your sensation is. It's heat absorbing. It's a very warm mulch. You feel it?
Yeah, different to that, of course.
Yeah, oh well, I mean, yes, but different also to anything else you can feel. It's quite hot.
Does it have maximum periods of growth on the water?
Yeah, that grows very actively from about a week ago on. And you can take it off. You can take a third of it off every few days. It just stays like that. Now, other reasons for it, we think it's preventing this pool evaporating. Because we have three of these ponds and this is the only one that didn't evaporate off last year. We're breeding giant lobsters in here, so it prevents a lot of predation on those. Well, we have bred them, or they bred themselves. This plant, you know, is the globe artichoke. It, as far as we're concerned, it's a no-care plant. We observed that these germinated and grew very well wherever we disturbed soil. So as we were going to have thistles, we thought we might as well have a good thistle. So that I straight away planted these two plants, and they did well without any care last year. I think they get down to the water level, or at least to the saturated soil level. So we spread them out this year, and a fairly casual count will show you there are about 50 of these we've put out, and this one now, last year's, now has probably half a dozen or nine plants there that you can dig up and set out. You don't have to do that except every 6 years, but you can do it annually too, and they will bear annually. You can see it's a large plant, it's about 6 feet across, and in the field you plant them about 6 feet in the row and about 9 feet between rows. But here we're planting them much closer, getting quite a good yield off them. At the spacing I gave you, only 600 of these plants is an acre of the plants, and the income's quite high in Australia. I don't know what it is now. In the States at present, it's about $40,000 an acre for these. However, with 52 plants around this, well, not 52 around it yet, 52 plants, a distance you've travelled, and very few plants actually put out, it's apparent that you'll get an acre's worth of plants in a very, you know, without ever looking at an acre. What you're looking at is the rough edges of ponds. Below these, not yet up, just carting come, I can only find a few for you. These are comfreys, and they are, by midsummer, the whole of the pond has very large comfrey plants. They're right around the pond every foot or two. They do two things, like the Zola. They're a high potash containing plant for mulch, and you can cut them and mulch these things with them. Or they feed ducks, and the Zola directly feeds ducks too. They eat it directly. It's full of life, by the way, so I don't know whether they're eating it for the animal life or for the plant life.
Will fish survive in that type of pond, or is the oxygen level too low?
Well, fish do survive in a Zola, but I don't know what stocking rates you're going to get, whether it be higher, lower, or different. I'm not sure at all.
And this stuff doesn't tend to migrate to somewhere else?
We take it around a fair bit, yeah.
In a moving water course, it would.
It won't form a mat at all in a moving water course.
No, but you get it spreading.
And it won't form a mat on a large area of water because it's a wind thrown up. In fact, this at times gets thrown up and on the bank. So it's only possible to grow it in relatively small ponds. And not all small ponds. Sometimes it just doesn't go. And don't ask me why. I don't know much about what it's doing. It certainly made the water extremely clear. It was a suspended clay particle, fairly muddy looking water, and now it's absolutely crystal clear water. Just chuck a handful in your pond, take a little bit in your... We got it from a natural source here. There's a lot of it in Tasmania. I think there's a lot of it everywhere. Now the general layout is what we were doing here. We're developing three of the normal trout rearing ponds along here, the ones that the trout fishery people would ask you to develop. We think they are the worst ones to do, but we're going to do them. So we'll have three ponds over this acre or so. These other small ponds are being held, all small ponds are being held for invertebrates, so we're not worrying the trout with small crayfish. Other things you'll notice as you go is we're starting to plant some 9 species of bamboo. Now, this one that Andrew sent home, he tells me, is a runner bamboo. Too late, alas. But anyhow, it's all pinned in by tracks. Don't worry about runner bamboos if you're mowing somewhere. Tea tree is self-regenerating. None of the small tea tree was here when we closed the property up. So the most trees that have occurred on the property are from lack of cattle. The one thing, there's a little plantation along there you'll see with broadleaves. That is, and you'll see a few of them stuck over in there in that corner. That's a garlic, that's the elephant garlic. That's the second crop we've found with no care. You can put it out in patches, it needs no cultivation, it competes with grass, and it sets just as many bulbs wild as it does cultivated.
And so also called there's Russian garlic,
also called Russian garlic. It's always on sale, it's quite a saleable product. It's preferred by a lot of people who don't like the other garlic. I prefer the other garlic. But the only reason I'm showing it to you is there are whole sets of plants which do need no cultivation and will go out into competitive situations and thrive quite well.
Now, what are the yarrow lilies over there, what have you got them there for?
Well, they were there. You'll see patches of them back further, they've been there a long time. These we set out, and you know why. Hey? Well, snail cover in the duck run, right.
Do you eat them?
The arums? No, I've never heard of anybody eating them here.
What about the, you're saying the other day, bulbs are... Okay, I've got them growing all over my yard and I'm busily pulling them up, but now I might just eat them instead.
That, what?
Except for the flower.
The arum lily?
Yeah.
That's one of the araceae. That has a lot of very poisonous plants in it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't eat it. I'd stick to your straight lilies. This is called a lily, it's not a lily. It's actually a rhizomatous plant. I don't know. No doubt it's edible. You might have to put through several processes to make it so. They're there for for ducks, they're in the duck run. Now the other thing that I want to point out is that you'll notice the scatter of, I'll say, bulbs through various environments. That's a case of, we had them anyhow. My grandfather's bulbs proliferated naturally. They're saleable. They're also a hedge to society's collapse, because when people are really poor, all they actually purchase is flowers.
I see.
And you can sell the bulbs or the flowers, but they fit in where nothing else that we can think of fits in. And they also, we try other sorts of flowers, in fact, a lot of other sorts of flowers, many of which aren't up, to see how many of them will come up and give us a yield with no more trouble than these vegetables. Now the third vegetable which has been going out, or food plant, is asparagus. No, that's not the third. The third one going out is the Jerusalem artichoke. Proved just as hardy as this. The yield isn't perhaps half that you would get in a cultivated situation. It's still an awful lot of root crop. And why we're putting it out is for pig forage. And we've none of it is yet up, so I can't show it to you. But I don't know how many we've got out. We've got a lot out. It's a sunflower type. So I want to point out to you that as you do trials around home, you discover plants which either produce as much or at least a worthwhile amount. Seem to be putting them out without cultivation, without considering you're building an acre of anything. In some nation, you get many acres of them out without ever having an acre of anything. And if they return even half the commercial estimate per acre, you're laughing. Now, if you put them out in relation to their manurial plants like we have here, you set up a pretty sustainable situation. One thing that's happened that we didn't plan is that almost everything we moved out with a parsley. And you'll see, I can see there's another one there, several of them. They're persisting very well. So you better put parsley on your no worry self-generating plants. As a crop in city, this is, I think, probably your highest return per acre on its own. And you need to have a steady market for it. Most of it is sold to be thrown away. It's what's strewn in butchers' windows, put on the side of your plate. Most people don't eat it. The ducks aren't even eating it. We eat a lot of it. So, parsley by accident. These are the grape variety of this small common hyacinth. We're also proliferating because they're a high-value plant, food plant, if you pickle them, the bulbs. So, and they proliferate very quickly. They're one of the first half dozen food crops in the Mediterranean. We're not growing them very much in Australia, but we've started to grow them. Again, a no-fuss plant. Everyone will give you a bunch of grape hyacinths to start your fortune there.
Did you sow the clover?
Pardon?
Did you sow the clover? The clover?
We sowed the clover, and we're now sowing parsley-clover mixtures from now on. And so you can graze your path, yeah. Any questions or things you want to know? Now that was just a mass of thorns. There was no hole through it.
Shall we tell any fruit that you plant along the way?
Yeah.
A bee run. A bee run.
A what?
A bee run.
Yeah, it can be a bee flight line.
Windbreak for your trees?
Windbreak for your trees. If it wasn't there, you couldn't get any of those trees in. And if you paced it out, we added 186 linear metres to the planting system by making a track. which wasn't there before. I think we'll complex it even further.